Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
What's the most resilient parasite?
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Can build cities, can transform the world, and rewrite all the rules.
That's what I'll be doing every single night.
Which is why...
No!
I have to steal it.
What are you talking about, Willis?
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
It's going to work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible.
The best in local, regional, and national sports.
With no hidden agenda.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back in just after 4 o'clock. We are 8 days away from Oregon Auburn, and what better time to head on down to Eugene and talk to our good friend Matt Prehm. You can find him at the old, as Rob says, 247
Sports. 247
Sports. Or you can find him on Twitter at Matt Prehm for all things Oregon Ducks. And from what I hear, a very, very good piece of barbecue as well. Matt, thanks for taking a couple minutes for us.
Hey, no problem, guys. How you doing?
I'm assuming there's a little barbecue happening for the first game. We doing something special down there?
Yeah, you know, I've got a little pork shoulder I've got sitting in the refrigerator tonight, and it'll be going on bright and early tomorrow morning for some pulled pork, and then tacos on Sunday.
I need like a rub recipe. You got to give me like the inside scoop there. I need a quality rub.
Ooh, I think the place. If you want to just like really good, you know, it's not going to screw up. And there's a website called Meat Church. It's a company based out of Texas. They got a really, really good blend. But if you want to go natural, then you make it yourself and, be all that homey type thing. Just get some, you got to have some garlic. You got to have a lot of salt and pepper. You got to have some, onion salt. You got to have some onion powder. You can go a lot of different directions with it.
You had me at Meat Church, right?
It's very good.
You can't go wrong with Meat Church. All right. So talk to me about Oregon camp. The Juwan Johnson thing. We hear wide receiver injury and everyone puckers up a little bit
sure.
Because there seems to be a rash, but what are we looking at here? Is this from what I'm hearing? This is not a big deal.
Individually, it's not a big deal. Juwan Johnson has what has been described as cramps or calf strain or, you know, some kind of injury with the leg. Don't really know exactly what it is. Chris Abal and his receivers coach, Jovan Boatnight, both said that, you know, they would expect him to be available for the game. Boatnight said if there was a game this weekend, he would play. But from a collective standpoint, look, there's only so many injuries that you can withstand just to be even able to practice. And Oregon's getting up to that point now where, you know, Boatnight said that, you know, Juwan Johnson's being held out. Chris Abal said today that they're, you know, precautionary reasons and they're limiting what he does. And they're down to, you know, 5 or 6 scholarship receivers that can go. And there's only so much you can do with, you know, 5 or 6 receivers until you start having to throw in walk-ons. So it sounds like Juwan is going to be able to help and be able to play for Oregon week one. But at the same time, you know, he's not practicing right now, at least.
How big a concern is this? Because you coming into the year, that's the one position on offense that you had a big question mark. And then every time I look up, I hear that one of the tight ends isn't practicing as well.
Yeah. So Breland, he's been out the last week or so. Chris Abal said that he will be full go starting tomorrow. Cam McCormick was the starter going into the year last year. He took the job away from Breland and hurt himself that first game and was out for the rest of the year, got back for spring ball, and then fall camp opened up and Chris Abal said that he had a small ankle injury and that, you know, he should be back soon. And, well, he's not been back yet. Chris Abal said today that he's done some work, but he's not been full go, but should be back soon. And I think, look, we've heard that all camp, and until he's back, he's not back in my mind. It's a concern. I mean, this was the position, I think, at receiver going into the football season, you could say, like, hey, they're good at quarterback. They're certainly good at running back. They're at offensive line. They've got options at running back. The defense at every position has guys. It's what do you have at receiver, and you don't really know. And since fall camp has started, they've lost their most experienced receiver coming back in Brendan Schooler. They've got probably their most impressive player overall, regardless of freshman, regardless of receiver, just impressive guy during fall camp, and Micah Pittman, he's now out. You've got J.R. Waters, who's in a boot, and Waters, we don't know how much Waters was going to play, but we've seen a lot of practice, and he's been running with the twos basically his entire time. Lance Wilhoit, another freshman receiver who's bounced between threes and twos, he's dealing with a hamstring issue. Sometimes he practices, sometimes he doesn't, you know, precautionary stuff. And now you got Juwan Johnson, who's also out with an injury, and even though coaches are saying that he's going to be back in time. So yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, I think this is the one position you couldn't lose guys, and you're starting to see guys get nicked up.
Yeah, run the ball then, play. Run the ball a lot, quarterback boots. Now, when we go to the other side of the ball, so much attention has been paid, you know, to the offense, but you haven't really heard a whole lot about the defense. Just kind of some general thoughts on, and are we still have position battles, or at this point, are we set with a starting 11 as we're, what, 8 days away from Auburn?
Yeah, I think there's going to be still some position battles to be figured out. One of the defensive end spots, you feel really good about Jordan Scott. You feel really good about Austin Folio. And then where does Gus Cumberlander fit in? Drayton Carlberg fit in? Gary Baker, you know, those kind of guys are battling it out. And then at one of the safety spots, Nick Pickett, he started, I think, 12 games for Oregon last season at the safety spot as a sophomore, true sophomore. Brady Breeze up from your neck of the woods up in Portland, he's kind of made things interesting and has, you know, Keith Hayward, the defensive coordinator or one of the defensive coordinators that they have, and also the safeties coaches said that those two guys, he doesn't know who's going to start, but both of those guys are going to play a lot. Cristobal said the same as much today. And it sounds like, you know, Breeze has made a really strong case for himself to, you know, to be the starter at one of those safety spots, the boundary safety. He's a guy that, you know, basically being a special teams player in the last two seasons, but he's really come on strong. He said that when Oregon hired Andy Avalos, the full-time DC, and the scheme change that came with that, it really suited his skill set better than what it was under Jim Leavitt. He said, you know, he's being asked to come up and, you know, be more of a hitter at the line of scrimmage and kind of get into that second level and help linebackers, which is kind of his strength. I'm really just interested to see what Oregon's defense looks a lot, what they look like in a game, because we don't really know, you know, are they a 3-3-5? Are they a 3-4? You know, what are they going to, you know, deploy, and how many shifts are there going to be and how many movements? I mean, offensive players have said that the defense has done a lot of shifting and, you know, there's a lot of movement pre-snap with the defense, which, you know, go pop in Boise tape, you know, State tape, yep, Chris Peterson tape, and swarm. That's what you see.
Move around.
And I think we're going to see a lot of that.
Well, and you would just think from just a schematic standpoint, it's got to be better than what you had last year. I've heard so many rumors about, you know, infighting and guys not being prepared and coaches not talking to each other, and it's not really been publicized a whole lot, but I've sure heard that just like even at the Washington State game that, you know, in the first half that you had screaming matches on the sidelines between coaches and conflicting game plans. So just the fact that you've got all of that drama gone and you've got one guy, one message now, I would think we're going to see an improvement on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, a lot of players have told me that this is a lot of the veteran players. And mind you, guys like Troy Dye, Lamar Winston, a guy like Brady Breeze, they've seen a lot of defenses. You know, Troy Dye showed up and Lamar Winston showed up and played under Brady Hoke. I mean, think how long ago that was. Yeah. And then it was Jim Leavitt. And then now it's Andy Avalos. And those guys have all said that the transition from the previous defense to the Andy Avalos defense has been the smoothest it's been. Not because the schemes that they're running or the plays that they're, you know, drawing up is, you know, simple and very basic. It's they said it's difficult. You know, it's high level stuff, but the way it's being communicated, the way that it's being brought up and taught in practice is streamlined, and it's very simple for them to pick up and understand. And that's led to a lot of confidence with the group, and, you know, they kind of know what they're doing. And yeah, you know, when I think it's safe to say that, you know, Jim Leavitt certainly was not eye to eye with everything that Mario Cristobal was doing. And I think Andy Avila certainly is. And I think you can tell, you know, just talking to Andy Avila, he's a smart dude. He gets it. And he has, you know, not that everyone didn't like Jim Leavitt, but he has, you know, the full grasp of the staff working with him as one.
Thibodeau, talk to me about him. Obviously, number one recruit in the country, big deal, looks the part. How much have we seen of him so far in camp? What kind of impact do you think he can make early on?
Yeah, you know, I saw a story today that was talking kind of about the conferences. One of the, you know, things about Oregon that they mentioned was that Thibodeau was in line to start. And I said that, I was like, really? I don't think that. I mean, he's good. He's going to play. He's on my list of, I just published a story today about seven freshmen, I think they're going to have roles on this team that are, you know, starting day one or game one. And Thibodeau is one of those guys, but I don't think he's going to start, and at least early on. And I don't even know where he plays. He's listed as a defensive end. He works out on the outside linebackers group. When we ask coaches about, oh, well, where is he at? You know, notice he's working out with the outside linebackers today. Is he more of an outside linebacker? Oh, no, he's the same thing. You know, that's kind of what we get for that. And I think, I don't know if that shouldn't mean from a negative standpoint. I think that's, A, how versatile he is. I just think, A, he's behind Gus Cumberlander at one of the defensive end spots. And Cumberlander, and I think that speaks to Cumberlander's growth as a senior. A lot of players have talked about how that guy's gotten a lot better. And then at the outside linebacker spot, this goes back to my comments of, I don't know what, you know, the defense is going to look like, because if it's a 3-3-5, which we see quite a bit in fall camp, we saw a lot in spring ball, that eliminates one of the linebacker positions entirely. And now you're, you know, one of your outside linebackers is gone, and he's not a stud, which kind of plays that hybrid position. He's not, he gets a little bit of work there, but I'm really curious to see where he fits. I think he's going to have a role. He's going to play in every game. He's going to, you know, be in the rotation. I just don't know where yet, just because there's so many variables we don't know about this defense yet.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you can find his stuff 24/7 Sports. You can find him on Twitter at Matt Preem, or of course Preem's Barbecue as well, for all those nice rubs and sauces and pork shoulders and all that. Matt, we appreciate it. We'll catch up down the road.
Hey, sounds good, guys.
All right. Well, there we go. We're both hitting the buttons.
We both hit it, so it stayed on air?
Dueling buttons.
That's confused.
I think we hit it, like you hit it, and then I hit it right after you.
So it kept it on the air. That doesn't make any sense, but okay.
It works out. I didn't know
technology you were hitting. Technology is technology.
It's one of those. All right, so we had a look down at Oregon camp. When we come back, let's go down to Corvallis. We'll have Angie Machado from Beaver Blitz. Let's talk a little Oregon State. They just named a quarterback today. That when we come back. Primetime here on The Fan.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Taking a tour around the Pac-12 here as we're just 8 days out for Oregon football, and even less than that, seven, I guess now. Yeah, we're right around the corner. I was going to say eight, but yeah, right around the corner here from Duck and Beaver football. So we've talked to little Ducks. Now let's head on down to Corvallis. We got Angie Machado on here, the owner and publisher of BeaverBlitz.com. You can find her online at AngieMachado1 there on Twitter. Angie, thanks for taking a couple minutes for us.
Absolutely. Best time of the year, guys.
Yeah, we're right around the corner. In fact, we have Pac-12 football coming up this weekend. We got Arizona, Hawaii, and that's something for Oregon State fans, because that's what the week two opponent there is, Hawaii.
Yeah, exactly. So they can do a little scouting of both teams that they play this season.
Yeah, and then some news out of Corvallis today. I don't know how much of a shock this is, but Jake Luton named the starting quarterback. How much of a competition was there really at QB?
You know, I didn't see a ton of competition. They kept saying it, but, you know, every practice we watched every single fall camp, every single spring camp practice, and Jake Luton was taking at least 80% of those first-team snaps. So I think it was kind of obvious all along, but to be completely fair, Tristan Jebbia really did come on strong this last week and a half, and I think they gave him every opportunity. And again, he's not a bad quarterback at all. But what Jake did with his body, kind of transforming his body, he's finally fully healthy. He's looked pretty sharp.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Smith said that it's the best he's seen him since he's been there. And I'm assuming, like, I'm not trying to say anything against Luton or anything, but I'm guessing that you give Jebbia as many opportunities as you can, because look, going forward, we know this is a program still in kind of building mode, and you know, Jebbia is probably the future. And so, yeah, I do think that I would assume that you gave him every chance to show that he was capable of doing that, because it would behoove you to get at some point this year, whether it's in backup time or if he gets some action, just, you know, spots here and there. I would assume you want to see some of Jebbia, because Luton's done after this year.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what, you know, Carter, our beat writer, and myself were talking earlier the week. Just, you're going to need to get Tristan Jebbia some reps in there, just live game snaps. And I'm sure we'll see both guys this season.
So when you look at Oregon State, am I crazy to think that this actually, and I don't know how many wins this translates to, but I look at it on paper and I know no one's expecting much, but am I crazy to think this offense might, I think this has a chance to be a top six, a top half Pac-12 offense this year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know, you know, it's interesting, you know, this team has struggled for so many years now, and the offense, you know, was fairly decent last year.
Yeah.
You know, they put up some big numbers, and you know, when you have a 3-year, you know, returning starter coming back for, you know, his third season with Luton, you have Isaiah Hodgins, you have Trevon Bradford, Noah Togiai is finally 100% healthy and has looked better than we've seen him look during his career. And then Jamar Jefferson, Art Pierce, BJ Baylor. I mean, they really do have some offensive weapons.
Now, offensive line, it was a bit of a concern last year at times. Hearing it's better, how has the O-line looked so far in fall camp?
You know, the offensive line, in my opinion, looks a lot better. And nothing against the guys that, you know, played last year, but, you know, they did lose three guys. But, you know, Sumner Houston was recruited as a defensive lineman,
yeah,
and they kind of just shoved him at center. And, you know, now they actually have, you know, Nate Eldridge competing, and he's a Pac-12 starter at center. So, you know, they have guys that actually know the role, were recruited to play that position. And then you have on that left side with Blake Brandel and Gus Lavaca, two super experienced guys. So Brandon Kipper has been pretty much anchoring that right tackle position and has looked really solid. In fact, I spoke with one person that's pretty well-versed in offensive linemen and is really excited with what he could bring the next couple of years in Corvallis.
Though I think the offense will be fine. Question is on the other side of the ball. I mean, look, you don't want to bash anyone, their kids, and everyone's playing hard, but let's call a spade a spade. The defense was atrocious last year. It just wasn't good enough to be in Pac-12 games. So give Beaver fan out there, who I think is going to like what they see on the offensive side of the ball, give us some hope that this defense is going to be better.
You know, it's crazy. And I know I've been watching, all I've been watching is Oregon State football, you know, all month, but this defense, you know, the staff made a ton of strides, you know, in this offseason, bringing guys in. So, you know, Jordan Whitley, if they can keep him healthy on the defensive line, real deal. I mean, the guy is taking double teams. So pass rush is going to be huge. And Addison Gums, a transfer from Oklahoma. I mean, he's a former 5-star player, Army All-American that signed with Oklahoma, who's now in Corvallis. And the guy's, again, real deal. He is coming out of the backfield, coming in, making stops. Avery Roberts, a transfer from Nebraska, linebacker. Again, they've just brought in some guys. Omar Spites, true freshman, expect him to play at linebacker. So it's a new look, right? I mean, you're going to see some guys that you've seen. You know, Oregon State played several true freshmen at linebacker last year. Matthew Tago has looked really good this year as those guys have kind of taken a second year under the system. But look for those new guys, the newcomers, to really be difference makers this fall.
And then he just, it's been a run of bad luck, but, you know, he came on the scene as a true freshman, and he looked like the one guy on the defensive side of the ball that actually looked like he belonged and was a Pac-12 player and looked like maybe an NFL player as he kind of grew and developed. And we know that there's been a rash of bad luck, but give me an update. Just where is David Morris at?
David, he's actually been practicing. So, you know, he had that broken foot last year. This spring, he was hampered with some tight hamstrings, kind of followed him into fall camp this year. But the past couple days, he's been going full speed and feels good. And I know that the training staff is doing everything they can to keep him loose and ready, and expect him to be back. And then Jalen Moore, the other side of the safety, also has a tweaked hamstring right now, but Coach Smith said today that he is day-to-day, so he is not out necessarily. But David Morris, as of right now, you know, local Sherwood guy. I'm from Sherwood, so everybody wants to see him succeed, local kid. But so far, so good for him.
Well, he just was such an impact player. You know, it was, as a freshman, when there wasn't a whole lot to like, he was a guy that really stood out, and you were like, okay, this is the sort of player that you need. And, you know, he's been derailed. So we look at the schedule next Friday, open up Oklahoma State, and then you get Hawaii, Cal Poly, and then obviously we get into conference play. What's realistic, or do we even know? Is this just a big giant question mark? But just your kind of thoughts as we head into the season here.
If Vegas has them at 2.5 wins, I think I right now have them at 4. I haven't come out completely with my wins losses yet. They're going to surprise some people. I just see, you know, there's going to be a lot, especially players that look at this team from the past year or the past couple years and overlook them. I really like later in the season, or they have the 3 preseason games, non-conference games, then they go with a bye, and then they have Stanford, and they have Stanford sandwiched between Oregon and Washington. I think that's a big chance for possibly an upset. Even Oklahoma State, I see that being a shootout game next Friday night. I think Corvallis will be super excited, and stranger things have happened. But this team, if you're a Beaver fan and, you know, you're thinking it's same old, I do see a much improved product this year.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. You can follow her. She's the owner, publisher, Beaver Blitz, and we look forward to talking to you a couple times this year, and hopefully the Beavers can surprise some people. Thanks for taking a couple minutes with us.
Thanks. Talk to you guys later.
You know, and I honestly don't know what to make of Oregon State. Obviously, I don't think Oregon State ends up being a bowl team or anything like that, but I'm kind of with her in that I have a sneaking feeling that Oregon State's going to get a pelt or two this year. I don't think
I feel the same way too. Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
I really like what they are building offensively. I think Jonathan Smith, I think you saw the impact he had when he left Washington. And I think when you look, again, I hate calling college players bad, right? And you're not paid. This isn't the NFL. They had a bad offensive line last year, and they had injured quarterbacks. It was a bit of a mess. And even with that, I think you saw hope in the passing game, and I think you have 2 to 3 really good running backs. And with an improved offensive line, a healthy Jake Luton, I really do think that you can put up.
What I saw yesterday, the most underrated receiving group, according to, I might even be Pro Football Focus.
Yeah.
In the country.
Yeah. This is going to be a good offense. The part that scares me is I just don't know if they can snap a nosebleed. They were so bad last year on the defensive side, and it wasn't a scheme. It wasn't a schematic thing. They just couldn't get off blocks. I mean, they just got pushed and bullied by everyone they played. And that to me is where I see an improvement. But if the defense can go from what we saw last year to just, I don't know the right word, competent, right? It just a defense that can keep games in the 30s even. I think you've got a chance to win some games if you're Oregon State.
There's only one way to go for the defense, right? I feel like that's as rock bottom as you can get as a defense for them last year. They got to get better in some way, shape, or form. And because of that, and because you get another year in this offensive system with, I think the receiving core is good. And seeing that stat on Twitter, I think it was yesterday, was kind of eye-opening just how good that receiving core actually is.
It does scare me a little bit, though, with Moore, your safety, with Moore being like, well, you know, he's got some issues and hopefully he's ready to go next week. And then David Morris, who I thought was the one defensive player that you had, you know, before he got hurt. Boy, that didn't sound real confident. From Angie about,
but that's just one game. That's a game that I don't think a lot of Beaver fans expect them to win, even if Angie feels a little bit like there's a chance in the interview. But all I'm saying is the offense was so good last year from what you expected. You have a whole nother year with it. You've got a lot of returning players, and if the offensive line will be better, and if the defense is just better, even if that's still not great but better, I can see them sneaking away with another extra win or two.
Tough schedule though.
Of course
you look at it, Oklahoma State. You know,
they're not winning that game.
They're not winning that game, right? And then at Hawaii isn't easy. Hawaii is pretty good. Cal Poly.
You'll learn how Hawaii is tomorrow watching Arizona.
Yeah, and definitely keep an eye on that. Stanford, you know, you get Stanford at home, but you're on the road at UCLA, on the road at Cal, on the road at Arizona, and then you finish the year with Washington State, Arizona State, Washington State, Oregon. It's tough. That's a tough way to finish the year.
I mean, the Pac-12 is tough, especially if you're a team who's at the bottom trying to work their way back up, because there's really not a lot of other gimmies in the conference right now. But
I think you just kind of wish that you had maybe UCLA, Cal, Arizona, believe it or not. I just think there are some teams, the Washingtons, I don't think it matters whether you play them at home or on the road. So I think when you're playing Cal, Arizona, UCLA teams that struggled a bit last year, I think I'd rather see those teams on I'd rather see those teams at home as opposed to a team that maybe it doesn't really matter whether you have them home or away. But again, fingers crossed. I just know that it's a lot more interesting when Oregon State is relevant. And I think that's all you're hoping for, is for improvement year two, see some growth and development. They're doing better on the recruiting trail, and that they can be in some ball games. But I think they're going to surprise the team or two
is
this
year. Is it really bad? And Beaver fans, you could text in the battery today, text on to 55305 if you have a thought on this. If the Beavers just suck again this year, 1-2 wins, does that hurt even worse than last year being rough? Because you have these now, I mean, you don't have high expectations, but you have improving expectations. Growth. Does that make it even worse than last year? If they still... Even if you see improvement, they only win one game. Let's say they only beat Cal Poly, right? And you still are saying, oh, the defense is playing better and the offense is exciting, but you can't win. Is that even worse than last year to you? Yeah.
Text us 55305. And someone's saying, worst defense, 2016 Oregon or 2018 Oregon State? I'm going to Oregon because they actually had some talented individuals and still managed to be horrific. Touche. That Oregon defense, there was no excuse for it being as bad as it was. That's the one thing you say about Oregon State last year. They just didn't have... They just didn't have Pac-12 players on the defensive side of the ball. That year that Oregon finished like 128th in total defense, that was the Brady Hoke year.
Was that the year they lost to Stanford like 63-20 at home?
Yeah.
I went to that game.
Yeah. That was, there's really no excuse for it being that bad. And by the way,
Christian
Brady
McCaffrey
Hoke,
is really good.
Yeah, Brady Hoke's been fired like three other times since then.
Yeah. You just watched him get fired in All or Nothing as the Panthers guy last year, the defensive line coach.
Don't hire Brady Hoke. All right, we come back in the news, primetime here on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Let's get right into it. It is August 23rd in the year of our Lord, 2019, and that means it is time for In the News. I am not your noted newsman. That is Isaac Rapp. I am noted news contributor, Jason Sukanik, along with correspondent, the great Mike Lynch.
Weekend correspondent here on the weekday. It's nice to be here.
It is National Ride the Wind Day.
What does that mean?
You ride the wind.
Like farts?
I had to look it up. It's about like gliders. I don't know. It's celebrating like the first, like, I don't know, like non-motorized flight.
So you're talking about those things that you just hold on with your hands in the front and you glide off of a cliff and die?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Or, you know,
you know what I don't want to do? Ride the wind.
Or you can take a paper airplane. Basically anything that flies without any sort of power, that's part of National Ride the Wind Day.
If I'm driving my car and I fart, am I riding the wind?
No, because you're not propelling yourself. It's being propelled by something else.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. If you were to somehow, like, jump off a cliff and then do that, and, it, like, it pushed you forward a little bit, then, yeah, you'd be riding the wind.
I'd be riding the wind twice.
Yeah, to your death, but yes, you'd be riding the wind. I've never glided.
Oh, no.
No.
That terrifies me.
Me too. Plus, being a bigger person, it's just... That whole thing, it just throws me off.
Look, I like... adrenaline things, like I enjoy roller coasters. I've done parasailing, and I'm not talking crazy adrenaline things, like I just like to do that kind of stuff. I'm not petrified of it, but the idea of holding on with just my front hands and gliding off of the cliff, and I know there's a harness there, but no. I'm good.
It's also National Sponge Cake Day, if that does anything for you.
I'm not a big sponge cake guy.
I don't mind sponge cake. You throw some fresh cream on there, maybe some strawberries.
I mean, look, it's not bad. I'll choose many other desserts before I choose sponge cake.
I'm with you. Give me a nice pound cake. I'll go to Pound Town before I'll go to Sponge Town. Not really doing it for me.
Mm.
Anytime I think of sponge cake, I just think of SpongeBob and the fun song. F is for friends who do things together.
U is for you and me.
That's all I think about whenever I hear
it. I prefer Plankton's version of it, though.
Yes, N is for no survivors. What do we got today? Hood to Coast has started.
Yes.
Let me ask you this question. If you don't post a social media photo of you running Hood to Coast, did you really run Hood to Coast?
No, it's the same thing. If a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear it, did it really fall? Or did it make a sound? That's the right thing.
I am convinced that the only reason Hood to Coast exists is for people to take photos and then post them on social media, and that none of us will care about. But
well, then why do marathons exist?
I think
it's the same thing. It's an endurance challenge. It's more of a mental challenge than
I think the marathon. To me, no offense to Hood to Coast, which, look, if that's your gig, man, more power to you. I see people out there smiling, having a good old time. Hey, awesome. I get it. Camaraderie, teamwork. But everyone always bitches and moans about it. But at least with the marathon, I feel like that is an ultimate test of endurance, right? Like, you're running 26 straight miles or 26.2 miles. Like, that's awesome. But some of the Hood to Coast stuff, you can run, like, 2-mile stretches, right? It's like you run like legs, and some of the legs are like 7 or 8 miles, and some of them are shorter.
From what was texted during Dirt and Sprague today is that most people run 3 6-mile legs.
Okay.
And there are different difficulties for those legs.
Yeah, depending on whether you're going up or down.
But
I would insist on down.
Most people, I would not, because it's really bad for your knees and hurts a lot.
You'd rather run uphill?
No, I'd rather run flat. But
oh, well.
Yeah, running downhill is really painful to my knees. But
it's better than running uphill. Running uphill eats it.
I like running uphill, actually. But not on a 6-mile course where I have to run 12 more miles. I think most people run 18 miles total, but there's different grades of difficulty for the various legs of the race.
I'm all for Hood to Coast. It just drives me crazy that I just get bombarded with first leg over, just check it in, second leg about to begin, here's me in the van, here's me in my crazy hat, here's me in my crazy running Hood to Coast.
We know you hate social media and that kind of thing, but some people like to share their positive experiences, man.
Does anyone like seeing photos of other people running Hood to Coast? Although I did see an account called called Cute Butts of Hood to Coast.
Hey,
someone retweeted
that's
that.
I can get behind.
Yeah, someone that was just taking photos of good backsides.
That's a little creepy, but I'll still accept the contents of that.
Yeah, maybe Sprague will make it on there. maybe Sprague will end up having a good ass of Hood to Coast. Oh my God. But everyone, be safe out there. Obviously, be aware of other people driving. Be safe running. Be safe driving. All that stuff. And update: Brendan Sprague is running 18 miles on a stress fracture. So
yeah. In
all seriousness, fingers crossed that that ends up being okay. I kind of think that's...
Yeah, this text says sharing pics is a way for people to celebrate each other, and it's all friendship.
See, I don't think it is. I think it's a way for you to take photos of yourself that you really like and then put it out and want to get congratulations and attaboys for doing something. I think it's about sharing. I think it might be partly that, too. I'm going to say it's mostly that. Like, think about it. No one puts anything on Instagram. Like, the whole point of Instagram is you're just taking photos that you really like of yourself, and you want other people to tell you that you look good in those photos. I mean, that's really all it is when you get right down to it. Like, very few people are taking photos of anything other than themselves.
True.
And it's like, hey, look at this photo that I spent an hour setting up. I look fantastic. Tell me I look fantastic.
You don't tell me, I hate you forever.
Yeah, pretty much. I get that, because I don't like anything on there. I don't. And I'll get people like, how come you didn't like my photo? I don't like anything.
I am filled with hate.
No, I don't hate anything. I don't like it. I'll just kind of scroll through. I'm not on there very much.
Is there a hate button? I'll press that.
I post something like twice a year. And I'll scroll through sometimes and see stuff. But I don't know. I just don't feel the need to really like anything.
Suk just follows all the sexy ladies of Instagram and just likes to scroll through and never like any of their pictures.
That's the other part of Instagram, right?
You just get the Instagram hot.
It's just something for like hot chicks to do.
Yeah.
You just post
and
things.
They get paid to take a picture with a product in it way too much money because society.
All right. Do you like cocaine and do you like bananas? Because if so, Washington's got a store for you.
I like bananas. I've never had cocaine, so I don't know.
Maybe Patrick Chung is on his way. I guess 3 Safeway stores up in Washington, along with the bananas. They started unloading these bananas on August 18th. And this is up in Bellingham. 3 Safeway stores. And they found, packed inside the bananas, 51 pounds of Colombian Bam Bam mixed in with the bananas. Authorities say that the cocaine was valued at more than $1 million.
Bellingham's having a party tonight.
How about King County Sheriff's Office says the same day safer workers found about 49 pounds of cocaine at the bottom of banana boxes at a Woodinville store as well. So we had 51 pounds of coke in Bellingham, 49 pounds in Woodinville, and then there was one other one that they said, but they didn't say how much they found.
Did someone lose all their cocaine, or was this an attempt to get cocaine to someone at the supermarket and they got caught?
I would assume that this is how you're shipping the cocaine, right?
Like, but then what? This is idiotic then, because of course that person might not open the canister of bananas at the supermarket, and someone else is going to find all those bags of white dust.
Well, I worked at a grocery store for a while, and I would unpack things. I worked there at night.
Find any spiders in there, like giant spiders?
Yeah, you find some stuff every now and then. Right. You find some bugs and whatnot. But, you know, for the most part, everything's on the up and up. But I can't imagine. Like, I'm just, you know, I was like 20 years old or whatever. I'm working at Albertsons. Like, I open up a pack of bananas. What do I do with 51 pounds of coke?
You're set for the rest of your life right there.
Just kind of pocket some of that. You're like, one for you? You called the police? Yeah, I found 47 pounds of cocaine.
Yeah.
You're an instant millionaire if you
by
know
the
how
way,
to
how
it.
Much are these full pounds going for, by the way? Eh? Oh, like $1,000, $2,000, $5,000 a pound? Cool. There's actually 44 pounds of cocaine.
Well, I mean, someone's missing it. Someone's
I just misweighted. I'm sorry.
A couple million dollars worth of cocaine found in Safeway stores. So if you are shopping at a Safeway in Washington, be on the lookout for white bananas. Or we come back, I don't know how else to put it, but we've got cow genital mutilation. I mean, plain and simple.
Do I want this news?
Oh, you want it. You want it. And the news rolls on when we come back.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, there's no other way to put it. Cow genitalia, let's get into it. Let's make it happen, Eastern Oregon. This story is one of the more fascinating ones, and I got down a rabbit hole today for like an hour digging into this.
Looking at strange pictures of cattle.
Did you know that like cattle mutilation was a thing?
I know there's a band called Cattle Decapitation, but no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and like some people blame everything from like aliens to chupacabra to the government. It's a whole thing.
Ah, so you went down the conspiracy theory hole.
I did.
That's what you
literally
did.
I'm not kidding. I spent an hour today. I even reached out to a lady who's a cow mutilation expert to see if she'd come on the program at some point. She's a little busy right now because this story, I guess, is blowing up and people are talking. It's a whole thing. Like, the whole UFO community is, like, up in arms. Like, the conspiracy theories around the theorists around the country are all focusing their eyes now on Eastern Oregon. So this is in Harney County, which is, like, Eastern Oregon Burns, right?
Like, there's show prep, and there's an hour of looking at cattle mutilation videos.
There is. There's, like, video. I learned about anal coring today for a cow. That's a thing, too. I had no idea, but it is.
All right.
So I guess there's a out here. Let's see the name of the ranch. It's Sylvie's Valley Ranch. It's a 140,000 acre property, and you know the cows run out there unchecked, right? You can't monitor all the cows on the property. I mean, think of what 140,000 acres, and they're saying some of this terrain is pretty rough stuff. So they said it's not that uncommon for a cow or a bull to, you know, to die. Right? Someone breaks a leg, you get stuck in a valley, you fall down, it happens. Okay. So when they found one that was dead, they were like, oh, well, that's too bad. It was just laying on its side. There was no sign of struggle or anything. But here's the thing. The tongue and the genitals were removed with medical precision. Then they found multiple other bulls. And here's the thing, too. Bulls only make up, I learned this, 4 to 6% of the cattle population, yet every one of these was a bull. It was not a cow. It was the male. And so up until now, I think we've got 6 of these.
In Oregon?
In the same ranch, in the same area, in the same county.
And is it really isolated, or is it like kind of in birth?
No, it's like...
Way out
there. Yeah, it's out there, man. Like, think Eastern Oregon, dude. You're in like rough country. So they've got 6 of these bulls now, with seemingly no wounds whatsoever, right? So there's no gunshot, there's no sign of struggle. And you're talking about animals that weigh anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 pounds, right? Huge, huge animals.
So I assume if they were alive, You couldn't just go over there and medically precision cut off their junk.
No. So they're dying. But here's the thing is no one knows how they're dying.
There's no poison in the system or anything? Or?
So they said that that can be a little tough. They're running tissue samples right now.
Okay.
Right? But they said that because they can't really agree, some people are saying that they found these bulls within a day or two. Other people are saying it could have been a couple of weeks. So they said they're going to run some tests on this to see if they can figure out if there's any toxins in the system. But they're ruling out any sort of natural cause, because if it was a natural plant or something that they were eating, there would have been more that would have been sick. It wouldn't have just been bulls. There'd be cows as well. And the fact that someone is with medical precision cutting out their tongues and genitalia, right? That's cows aren't dying of natural causes. Then the coyotes are coming along with scalpels and cutting off junk.
How do you know?
And here's the other weird thing too. No footprints, no tire tracks. No, like you can't get into this country, right? Like without leaving a mark.
And there's no marks.
No marks.
All right. So theory number one, like in Futurama, where an alien species has human nose as a erotic thing that they buy and sell on the market, maybe this alien species that is coming down to Earth in middle of nowhere, Eastern Oregon, has cow tongue and or bull tongue and bull ween as erotic things for their society.
Yes. Aliens. I'm telling you, man.
Aphrodisiac. That's the word. They're aphrodisiac.
And I looked into this. So I guess this all started like in the 1970s, like late 70s, early 80s. This became a thing.
And you know what Oregon touches? Nevada. You know it's in Nevada, Area 51.
Area 51. And so there are people that are blaming like government. There's theories because there's been some stories, and not in this one. I haven't seen anything on the one in Eastern Oregon where people claim they see like lights in the sky. And because there's no tire tracks in and out, and then with rough country, you can't just like, no one's hiking through like killing bulls with their bare hands and then cutting off the genitalia and hiking out. You would leave tracks. Some people are blaming like government black op, like helicopters. No one knows exactly why the government want to fly in and like stealth helicopters and kill and mutilate bulls, but it's a theory out there. Other people are blaming.
That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know, but something's killing these things, and it's not random. So this is.
So it's aliens. Since the 70s, that's weird though. See, if it was the government, even with all their technology, they'd leave some sort of a trace. There'd be something, right?
One would think.
So it's not the government. That's right out.
Yep.
Cross that off the list then.
So these five dead bulls were found July 30th and July 31st in a wooded area. And it was about 15 miles from US 395. And this is about 40 miles north of Burns.
I found it on the map, Sylvie's. Yeah. It's between John Day and Burns.
Yeah, there's nothing out there, right? I mean, it's...
No, it's... There is a little airport strip, but yeah, there's nothing out there.
And the bulls are found about a quarter mile apart. They have put out a $25,000 reward, and they're saying the bulls themselves were worth about $7,000 each, and then each one of them could have sired up to 100 other calves in their lifetime. So they're saying that this is kind of a big deal to these ranchers, and that is a lot of money that they're out. And this is an area, by the way,
I'm just looking on the maps. There's nothing here.
No, they say the cattle outnumber the people in this area 14 to 1.
Well, maybe that's what it is. Maybe the people in that area are scared that they're going to be taken over by all the cattle. So they're getting rid of the bulls who are going to be birthing all these cows and bulls. And they're saying, no, you don't get to make babies. And then we're going to outnumber you now, bulls.
Why would you then cut off the genitals and the tongue of the bull?
Well, look, you're poking holes in my argument right now, right away. I have no idea. I'm coming up with crazy crackpot theories here. I don't know.
It blew me away. I'm telling you, if you're bored and you want to kill like an hour, look up cow mutilation, and it's a whole thing, man. It is an absolute whole thing. Everything from government to aliens to the supernatural, but apparently it's here in Eastern Oregon, so they're encouraging everyone out there to please be on high alert. I guess we don't have to be on high alert here because I don't know how many people have cows around here. But if you do, be on the lookout. The aliens are coming for you. All right, we come back. The Hot 5 at 5, primetime here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.